Welcome along, but listen, we don't talk about Pedri. It's a secret. Why else isn't La Liga broadcast on a major platform in the United Kingdom and Ireland? Yes, the young sensation's sensational goal brought an end to the world's worst unbeaten run. Ironically, in a match where Sevilla's approach was actually justified. One goal in four league games. I wonder what their problem is. So it's Real Madrid top and it's Barcelona second. There was nothing fishy about Madrid's win at Celta Vigo, apart from the three penalties and the opposition having a goal disallowed when a header has gone past two defenders who were deeper than him and hit the post and got him. Alternative view, Celta probably should learn to tackle. In fact, the league is Real Madrid top, Barca second, Atleti third, a kind of order restored. They're above Sevilla on goal difference. They've still got to play them later in the season. Felix scored early. Luis Suarez scored late. That's the way it should be. The relegation battle as well is fun, especially with Villarreal giving away free gifts. Fun unless you're a Rayo Vallecano supporter. Just can't get a win. We'll preview the Champions League. The English sports media have kicked off their three-day Atleti Crime Watch special, in which the expression dark arts has to be used 103 times per hour. If you want to join us on Patreon, you can. We have a longer chat. We'll be looking back at those European games later in the week. Patreon.com/LTEL, and you can join in from a couple of quid, a couple of dollars, a couple of euros, however you want to pay. As long as it's one of those. I'll just say, by the way, La Liga TV does a great job. And the in-depth coverage, I think, is something that the hardcore of Spanish football fans felt they weren't getting from Sky post Revista de La Liga, which was a very popular programme in our La Liga community after that. But the games were all there. But so I think because it's all up for grabs again. Grabs. Not many people grabbing at it at the moment. The obvious solution is that you put that players like Pedri not being broadcast. Not many people know who he. They've seen him in the Euros and stuff, but he's not as famous as he should be. That goal that he scored should have been talked about, by everyone in the English sporting community. I think the answer is, let's say three games, Real Madrid, Barcelona, best of the rest or something on BT or Sky, ideally. And then the rest of the, and then you also give everyone La Liga TV in with the price. What's wrong? What is wrong with that as a solution? And then you get all the in-depth stuff. You get all the long chats that come with it. You get all the coverage of all the other games. So, the hardcore, the really committed people get what they want. And the casual fan gets to watch Pedri and Benzema. Seems a simple solution to me, but there we are. Nothing is simple in the world of sports rights.
Vinicius in that bracket as well.
Yeah.
I think Vinicius is another one, and I think he's a selling point now of La Liga that young players at big clubs, we've always had excellent young players coming through at clubs in La Liga. It's been a real good place for young players to thrive. But recently it's turned into Real Madrid and Barcelona with their young players. I know Vinicius was bought from Brazil. Pedri and Gavi and Nico and Araujo, three of them have come through the system at Barcelona. Araujo was purchased for a young age. And, João Felix is another young player. I know he came with a hefty price tag, but I think it's a real good selling point of La Liga. And the league is stronger now in terms of the rest of the teams than it's ever been. We those days of Barcelona and Real Madrid winning 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 something have gone, thankfully.
Yeah.
Which kind of added to the attraction of La Liga, but it also was detrimental to La Liga. It was people liked seeing Ronaldo score 4 and Bale scoring 4 and Messi scoring 4 in a game and Luis Suarez. But I actually prefer what we're seeing now. I think Barcelona and Real Madrid could be better, but I prefer what we're seeing now where every single game they play in, it's up for grabs, and it's a tough game. It's even the teams that are struggling in the bottom. At the weekend, that was Atletico's first win against the team in the bottom three this season. Mm. Now, that hasn't happened in the past. I know Atletico have not been one of those teams that thrash teams 5 or 6 nil and it's done by half time. But they've always managed to win relatively comfortably against the teams in the relegation zone on their way to winning a couple of titles. But now every game is tough. So if you want to see competitive action with the better teams, we've got the two at the top now, back at the top. I think it's a selling point for La Liga. And I agree with you. I think people should know more about Pedri, about Vinicius, there's other players as well that we could go right through the league. I think it's right. I think the work La Liga TV do, the in-depth analysis, they try to treat every team fairly, so every team, wherever you support, gets coverage, not just the game, but the analysis during the week and after the games and pre- and post-match. So it is a shame. That goal from Pedri, may as well start there with the Barcelona game.
Yes.
The goal from Pedri. He's missed his chance there. And there was four players on the floor on their backsides on the edge of the 18-yard box. Diego Carlos bounced straight back up.
The great thing about that goal
from him
is that the defending was good. They threw themselves. He was going to shoot. They threw the defenders throwing themselves in front of him to stop him shooting, and he worked it, and then he still produced a sensational shot.
It was a brilliant goal. It was recent. He scored one recently, didn't he, in the Europa League as well, which was similar. He's added that to his game. It wasn't difficult to see how he could get better. The one thing lacking was maybe the attacking third of the pitch to be a little bit more incisive and to perhaps be a bit more daring. And because you know he's got the ability this season, he's doing that and he's getting into the attacking positions and he's been a touch more selfish as well, which does develop as you're a young player, because as a young player coming into a first team with celebrated players, you are reluctant at times to go alone. And now, I guess if you're a Barcelona supporter, thankfully that's what he's doing, and is he becoming an even better player? He's an astonishing player. I mean, he's so involved in the game the whole time as well. He's tackling and winning the ball back. He's moving the ball on quickly. He's finding really good passes instead of just basic, safe, average passes. And then he's got the ability to take people on with a dribble. And he puts his foot in. He puts his foot in. He withstands physical pressure as well. Similar to Gavi. Gavi came on and within 5 minutes, he wants to have a fight with Diego Carlos. So they've both got that little bit of spirit of being a street player. And probably Barcelona is the place where that attribute thrives. And Xavi is certainly getting the best out of Pedri. And keeping the other players on the fringes involved as well. The substitutions he made were understandable. And he wants to keep people like Gavi and Nico and Memphis involved in the core of the team. So Pedri was the difference between the two teams last night. Two different styles. Sevilla were back to what I consider to be something approaching their best. Not a surprise because they got players back from injury, so that makes them stronger. And over the weekend, I was listening to so many not La Liga analysts, I guess, I have to include them in that. And it's almost sound, and I've probably done this before, the high press, which I hate using that word, it's too cliche. And that the high press is a must if you want to win a game of football, it's not. And Sevilla showed that last night. You know, you can close down people. You see, I didn't use the word press there. You can close down people high up the pitch. You can close down. You have to close down people at some stage. And some teams over the weekend didn't do it well enough in any part of the pitch. And that's why they lost. It's not because they don't do it high up the pitch. You have to have a plan. You drop off. You let the other team have the ball. You can let certain players have the ball. You can force the opposition into playing the ball to a certain player in the back four that you know might be weaker than the rest, that you know you might be stronger on that particular side or down the middle. And there are so many different variations. And I keep hearing commentators and pundits saying, they're not pressing. You don't have to press. And Sevilla showed that last night. This isn't just me going on a rant. Sevilla showed last night that if you drop off and let Barcelona have it, that's not a problem. It doesn't mean you're going to lose the game. But then you have to make sure you have a plan when they get into the attacking half. There's times where Barcelona are finding it really difficult to break them down. And they did. And it took a moment of magic from Pedri to be the difference between the two teams. Not many teams have that bit of magic. So therefore, Sevilla, with their plan, could have got a draw out of that game last night. And for once, a draw would have been a decent result for Sevilla. So it takes all different types of plans and strategies. I've not always been complimentary to Lopetegui. Far from it, I have to be honest. But I thought last night against a team that's playing really well in Barcelona with better players now than they had in the first half of the season, his plan almost paid off and Barcelona found it hard to break them down. So I think it's onwards and upwards for Sevilla with the players back from injury. But Barcelona, I've looked at the fixtures coming up and you know what? Real Madrid going to win the league, I think. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, oh, Real Madrid, I think you're going to win the league. Yeah, of course I think they win the league. But I think it's a debate now, because I don't see Barcelona dropping a point between now and the end of the season.
Really? Let's have a look.
So yeah. I've looked at the fixtures.
Yeah.
Okay. And if Barcelona get...
We can share these. So if you want to be a Patreon, you get to watch. You get to watch us, which is, I think, the major selling point, Terry. So let's have a look. Barcelona's fixtures. So, yeah. Here we go then. Courtesy of Soccer Base. Here we go then. Right. So Eintracht Frankfurt, obviously, Wednesday.
Yeah. Then you got Celta.
Levante.
Cadiz, sorry.
Yeah. Levante. Yeah. In between. And then Cadiz. Yeah. Real Sociedad.
Well, it could be tricky, but you don't need many goals to beat Real Sociedad. Home to Rio, home to Mallorca, away to Betis, which is going to be a tough game. I think that's the toughest game out of the lot. Home to Celta, away to Getafe, home to Villarreal. With the form they're showing at the moment, the run that they're on, if they win, it's feasible for them to win all nine to take them to 84 points.
Yeah.
So Real Madrid then needs 16 points, and they've got a game in hand. Real Madrid will need 16 points from 8 games.
Yes, and they've got...
They need 5 wins and a draw, so they should do that at the very least.
Yeah.
But you start drawing a couple of those.
Yeah, they've got to go...
The picture changes, yeah.
They've got a couple of difficult games, haven't they? So they've got Getafe, they're home to Getafe, in between the Chelsea games, we'll get to that in a bit. Away to Sevilla, away to Osasuna, home to Espanyol, away to Atleti. A couple of difficult games, take your point. Levante, yep. Cadiz, and then at home to Betis last day. Yeah, I mean, I tend to, yeah. So what's the difference now? It's 9, is it? No, it's 12.
12. 12. Maths,
yeah. But Barca got a game in hand. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a debate now where I never thought... The debate all season has been Barcelona top 4. Then Xavi takes over. They make signings. And it's that, yeah, we all think they're going to get top 4. Now I'm hearing Barcelona players after the game, they actually got a little twinkle in their eye that they're chasing down Real Madrid. Now, you know, it's a big jump. And I think it's a debate. That's all I'm saying now, that it is a debate. And, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was a foregone conclusion that Real Madrid win the league. It almost still is. I don't expect a slip up from Real Madrid. But if you're Barcelona and you could close that gap maybe to the end of the season to 5 or 6 points or something, then, you know, that they will see that as some kind of successful season, especially if they were to go on and win the Europa League. So the signs are good from Barcelona. I enjoyed the game, thoroughly enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the tactical strategy from both teams. And I enjoyed the quality from both teams as well. Severe lack of cutting edge up front. That's even with Martial, the player that has been brought in at huge cost to be an upgrade on Nesri and Rafa Mir. And to be honest, that's not working out for him. It's not working out for Severe. So I think it was a real high quality game. One that people would enjoy if more people had access to it. If more people had La Liga TV or Premier Sports. That Sunday night game I think it was a brilliant game of football last night.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And people moaned about there being too much football on TV. It was brilliant last night, because at the same time, my son had the Juventus Inter game on the other, so we had 2 tellies going, obviously, and it's tremendous. Yeah, I remember, you know, old man story, growing up, and there's like one live game a week on the telly.
Yeah.
Previously there'd been no live football on the telly.
I remember none.
And I'm now you're sitting there thinking, oh, so what, how are we going to watch all these games? And at the same, you know, how many devices have we got to watch them at the same time? Right, a couple of questions. Apansky wants to know about Araujo's renewal. He says they need to renew him, he's a beast.
Yes, of course they do.
How important... we discussed this before, haven't we? The Barcelona's very complicated jigsaw that they've got this summer, and it's probably not going to change for the next couple of years. They've done far better with it than we all expected. Getting into the Champions League will make life a lot easier.
And the 400 million from Spotify...
Yes, that certainly helps. The old Spotify account now as well.
They have a pool, don't they? Barcelona, when people are writing them off completely, there's always a pool for people to go and play there, like Aubameyang. There's a pool for sponsors and endorsements, and there's a pool for people to pour money into that club. Mm. So it was never going to be the case where they disappeared off the face of the earth. and ended up, I don't know, Derby County or something. It was never going to happen. It was just the constitution of the club makes it slightly more difficult because someone doesn't own it. It has to go to votes and it has to go. So, so money-wise, the financial side of it, it didn't. I didn't think it was that much of an issue. I know it sounds daft when it was we're talking about well over $1 billion, but there was always going to be ways of getting money into the club. And if the club's run properly, then they should be able to thrive. So Araujo, if you're running a club properly, I'm sure Araujo isn't going to be asking for the likes of Messi and Dembele is wanting. Aubameyang is going to get paid and stuff like that. He will be realistic. And I'm pretty sure he must realise that at his age, it's probably the best place for him to be. As long as he's the first choice centre-half, and I think with Piqué coming towards the end of his career, although he's still playing well, but I think as long as he realises he has some sort of understanding that he's going to be a long-term future first-choice centre-half, if his form merits that, then he should be willing to stay at Barcelona. I think the Eric Garcia one's interesting. He does seem to get the nod occasionally. Araujo has been used at right-back. The football side of it needs to be tidied up with where he stands at the club. But I agree with you. I think if he isn't signed by Barcelona, I'm pretty sure he will be, then I'm sure all the other big clubs around Europe will be keen to sign him. That'd be an understatement. He's a super player.
Right. Let's move on and do Real Madrid. So they won away to Celta Vigo. Right. So how controversial, this is argument time, isn't it, this one? How controversial are these? There are people who are saying that they're outrageous. The alternative, as I said at the intro, the alternative view is that Celta just need to tackle and not leave your foot, not be clumsy in the penalty area. So the first two I'd give, I think. The third one is a very modern penalty. I think Pete Jensen on La Liga TV, I think he summed it up nicely, as in it would be nice if the guidance for referees was who has made that contact happen.
Yes.
If that was the bar, because it was their contact, obviously. Was Mendy the player with the forward momentum? Yes. Could he have avoided it very easily if he'd really wanted to? Also, yes. So, yeah. And then the offside. So let's do the penalties first. We'll come back to the offside.
I think first one and three penalties were dubious. I think the similar one on the first one.
Right,
yeah. It was Militao, wasn't it? I think he found the contact as well. I can see the referee giving that VAR, probably not an obvious mistake to overturn the referee. I didn't think Nolito actually stuck his foot out and tripped or made a clumsy challenge. He was guilty of getting too close. And the contact was found. It appeared to me, I have to be honest, that by the third one, that Real Madrid knew that if they made and found contact in the box, then it was likely to be result in a penalty being given. I have to congratulate Celta Vigo on their restraint, because I think it's the only second time in history that a team has had three penalties given to them away from home. And I'd never played in a game where, whether it's home or away, where the opposition got three penalties and you had a goal disallowed. I'd have been red carded. No doubt. I can't believe Aspas kept his nerve, kept his cool. I can't believe Caldet kept his cool as well. There was almost, by the end of the game, a look of resignation from the Celta Vigo players and the manager that we ain't going to get anything here. At the same time, I was watching Man United against Leicester, and Leicester had a dubious goal disallowed. And McTominay should have got a red card. I'm watching the two screens at the same time, and I'm thinking, this is big teams. It was what happens. Big teams.
That's true. Yeah.
Favourable decisions. Yeah. I played for two small teams, two big teams, and I knew the difference. You know, the minute I left Tottenham and went to Coventry, and I'm playing against Tottenham, a few days after I'd left the club, I felt every decision went in favour of Tottenham. And from then on, I never changed my opinion about referees favouring bigger clubs. It's a mate thing, it's a blokey thing. They're more at ease with big name managers, whether that's in the Premier League or La Liga.
Scrutiny as well.
Evidence of that.
If you get a decision wrong against Real Madrid, against Manchester United, Barcelona, you're going to get hammered so much more than if you get a decision wrong against Elche.
And, well, there was a Granada one this weekend as well. Granada got a penalty.
Yeah.
Not too much has been mentioned about that. Terrible.
Yes, we'll come to that later.
So I take your point. The scrutiny on that will be just in the match report.
Yeah.
If you make a big call against Real Madrid or Barcelona.
You and I will do 30 seconds on it.
This is not just Real Madrid. Barcelona get favourable calls. Yeah. I don't think Atletico Madrid get that element as much as the other two. But then there was the René Udo challenge the other week. I can't remember who it was against. It was a diabolical challenge, and he got away with the yellow card. So it's the big club issue. I think Celta had to sort of realise they couldn't make a challenge. You say don't tackle properly in the box. It almost appeared at the end of the game that they couldn't make any type of challenge. Because the third one, I think that the Kevin Vasquez isn't making a challenge. You can see in the slow motion, he goes to and he draws his leg back and keeps it away. And somehow Mendy found him and flopped to the ground. That one was a really poor call.
And then the offside. So it's Gallardo's header, isn't it? I think.
It's an in swinging cross from the left, swinging in towards goal. Good header.
Yeah, miles onside.
Gets a touch, doesn't he? Miles onside. Aspas is offside from the cross, but he's nowhere near getting on the end of the cross. Great save, Courtois. He gets a touch onto the post, but it's one of those where it hits the post, bounces across goal, and there's spin on the ball. If people haven't seen it, the spin on the ball that's taking it back into the goal. It's inside. So it's gone from left to right with a bit of spin, and it's going in. Aspas runs towards it, having been offside, is aware that he's going to be offside if he touches it, and doesn't touch it. But does he impede? I can't remember who it was.
Alaba. Yeah.
Does he impede Alaba from clearing the ball? Possibly. There is that element of doubt.
I think he does.
But he doesn't make a move to block him, does he?
No.
I don't think he even knows he's there. He's just watching a ball trickle over the goal line.
But given that we are now seeing a player standing roughly in the goalkeeper's eye line being given as a reason to disallow a goal for offside, now that we're using VAR like we are. So you know, a shot goes in from 30 yards. There's a player standing, I don't know, you know, an inch offside. The goalkeeper had to sort of look around him a bit. Let's disallow it. So by that token, Aspas has got to be disallowed, hasn't he? Because he initially goes to race Alaba to the ball, and then he stops. But Alaba's got to go around him. I can imagine if you're a Celta Vigo fan, you'd be furious. But actually, I think that is now offside.
Yeah, no, I tend to, by the letter of the law, I think you're right. I think as Alaba goes to, I'm not convinced Alaba would have cleared it.
It would have had a go.
And Aspas didn't try to.
Yeah.
He was just there. And Aspas explained afterwards, he didn't even know Alaba was there. So Alaba had to go sort of slightly around him to hook it. Whether he really got it, I don't know. So the three penalties, the disallowed goal, are all close calls. Just to have them all go against you in one game or all go for you in one game is quite unusual. And there was periods of the game in general, Celta were the equal of Real Madrid. I nearly said the better team, that would have been too harsh. They were the equal of Real Madrid. Loads of possession, attempts on goal, played really well. So this is an example of those tough games that Barcelona, Atletico Madrid face now on a weekly basis in La Liga. If you're not at it, if you're not doing the right thing, Courtois was man of the match for Real Madrid, which tells you how well Celta played, how many attempts on goal they had. So it was a hard-fought victory. Unusual circumstances with the three penalties. Benzema missing one is unusual as well. But they got the job done. And it was important that they did. As I said earlier, with the fixtures that are coming up, the run that Barcelona are on, and, you know, Real Madrid can't afford to allow Barcelona any more encouragement than they're already getting. Otherwise, there will be I wouldn't say genuine race on, but there will be more pressure on Real Madrid than what we've seen. And it was an important result on the back of the El Clásico. They've had to wait a long time to get it out of their system. And that probably, you know, serves its purpose, the result of the weekend, which means they then go into the Chelsea game with a little bit more confidence and belief in what they had prior to the game on Saturday. Benzema fit again. That's the main issue, isn't it?
Yeah, because the way they played away to PSG, I thought they were poor, but they were hanging on, weren't they, for the 0-0. They very nearly got it, didn't they? And then Mbappe scored a really good goal at the end. But Benzema, crucially, wasn't really fit for that game, was he? He was a bit of a shadow character. They played dreadfully in the Clásico, as you explained at the time. Go back and listen to this if you want, everybody. It was tactical errors made by Ancelotti, wasn't it, to try and replace Benzema. So, what are your thoughts on Chelsea versus Real Madrid? Are Real Madrid up to the levels of, say, Brentford, who can go to Chelsea and win by 4-1?
Yeah, I mean, that was a shocking, stunning result, Brentford. Mm. I mean, it's what Eriksen has done there. I mean, I thought they were going down. They were on a run of results and form where they weren't picking up goals. And all of a sudden, Eriksen turns up, signs, and they look a fantastic team at the moment. So I think that has to be put down as just one of those stunning results we get from time to time. Do Real Madrid have a chance against Chelsea? Of course they do. It's Real Madrid. It's the Champions League. It's the last eight. Of course they can do that. So I think, therefore, we have to wise up in the UK in terms of writing off teams just because they're not in the Premier League. And we have to wise up and give Real Madrid respect. Real Madrid can beat Chelsea. Chelsea are Champions League holders at the moment. They can beat Real Madrid. It's 50-50. I mean, it obviously goes without saying that the away leg for Real Madrid is important. The first leg, that's a benefit to them that they're away. There was a talk of it being swapped over, wasn't there? Because they didn't want the two Madrid teams to be playing in the same city in the same week in the next leg against Chelsea and Man City. But thankfully for La Liga teams, that didn't change. So I think that's important. And will Chelsea react like Atletico Madrid reacted when they got beat by Levante? Are Real Madrid reacting like Atletico Madrid when Real Madrid got the thrash 4-0 in the Clásico? These teams in the Champions League, they all have winners, they have world-class players, they're elite footballers, elite coaches. There's very little difference to choose between them. So I certainly wouldn't rule out Real Madrid. I wouldn't make them underdogs in this tie. I think it's 50-50. Two really good teams, excellent teams. And, it's not easy to predict the outcome, but Real Madrid can win it. Real Madrid can win the competition. So it's in the balance, I think.
What about Atletico? So they beat Alaves by 4-1. João Felix, again, scoring an early goal, which is a sensational little run. I just had a look on Football España and noticed that Jimenez is injured and will miss the first leg of Manchester City. So obviously, Terry, we would have to cry collective salty tears for cheating Atleti if they were to get results against Manchester City. What chance have they got against City? They are clear underdogs, aren't they?
No, I don't think so.
No, I
really don't. I think they're in a really good run of form. They've got the confidence back. Joel Felix is playing well. Jimenez being injured is a blow. I presume Felipe Hermoso will come in and replace him. Suarez has confused things a little bit, to be honest, coming on and scoring two goals.
You can't start him, can you? Don't do that.
I don't think so, no. Away from home, where I imagine the plan from Atletico is fast start, then step back into defending a goal. The three will become a back five. Will you play Carrasco at left wing back? Will it be Lodi? I guess Lodi, if you're playing away from home in the first leg and you want to be a bit more resilient, who will play right wing back? Personally, I'd go Llorente over Rosalico. Then you've got enough midfield players to fill the three midfield positions, Griezmann and João Felix up front. But Suarez, the second goal, I mean, he comes on and scores the penalty. His second goal was a fantastic finish. Mm. Mm. So somehow, if you can get him in that position, he's still a valuable asset, but he can't chase the channels. He can't close defenders down.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold the ball up.
And it's Man City away. That's the problem. It's not Alaves at home, is it?
Exactly. But it'd be interesting to see what Simeone thinks, where he looks at it and thinks, oh, yeah, Luis is back. He's his best. His best position at the moment. And I don't want to be detrimental to a superstar footballer, one of the best finishers of all time. It might be as a sub.
It definitely is.
It clearly is.
Yeah. Because at that level, he can still play at that level for 20 minutes a game when the game is open, where, because as a centre forward in modern football, has to work, always did in a sense, but has to, you have to work incredibly hard, don't you, for the first phase of the game when everyone's closing down.
Buzzing.
And
everyone's, the tempo is high.
Yeah.
I mean, Cunha played better. Cunha made a bigger difference, but didn't score.
Yeah, yeah.
Cunha was super when he came on because he's got those attributes.
Yeah.
So he might be one that you might look and think, Chelsea away, I actually could think about replacing Griezmann with Cunha if you're Simeone.
Yeah.
Because Felix can drop in, get the ball to his feet. I mean, we'll have to talk about João Felix in a minute, but Cunha is the one that could hold the ball up and chase the channel as more than, say, Griezmann or João Felix. So that's a good option. But it's Suarez's, the way he takes that goal. It's a hallmark. It's got a stamp on it of a Luis Suarez. That is it. You know, it takes it early, sees the goalkeeper, improvises with the front foot finish. Brilliant strike. And Atletico made hard work of it to the later stages of the game against a team that they should be knocking over quite easily. João Felix with the first goal. Brilliant header. And that's something that, do you know what? We haven't seen a lot of him since he's been at Atletico. We've seen enough to know he's got some talent. He's got a first touch that's amazing. The amount of times in a game I see him with his first touch, one of them led to a goal. One of it, the way he brings the ball down out of the air and stuff like that. And his dribbling skills are amazing. His passing skills are amazing. I didn't realise, because we haven't seen that much of him, he's pretty good in the air as well, you know?
Yeah. He was aiming for the other corner, that header, wasn't he?
There was an element of that. No, I think he was aiming for that corner, but there was a little switch with the head that led you to believe that. But I think if he had less power on it, I would have been convinced of your argument. But I think the power was enough to suggest that's where he was aiming, but there was a little movement at the head that was off. But it flew in the top. But even his aerial capability on the long ball from back to front, he backs in well. And he's got a decent jump. He's not small by any means. He's not my size. He's probably 5'10", I'm guessing. And he's got a good jump on him. And he doesn't mind putting himself against centre-half. So it kind of, it doesn't fit with the narrative that I had, that he can't lead the line.
Yeah,
I actually beginning to feel now that in some games he can. He runs the channels. He's quick. He's a lovely footballer to watch. And if you don't enjoy watching players like João Felix, it's easier for us because we haven't got any bias towards any teams in La Liga. So you can just sit back and watch the talented players in Spanish football and enjoy them in a more relaxed attitude. If you don't enjoy watching João Felix, why are you watching? You know, he's a super player. And he's turned things around. He's joined that long list of players now that have taken a long time, not all of them succeed, in winning over the manager. And now you're seeing that, you know, why they paid all that money and why other clubs would probably pay the money they paid if it didn't work out like that to come through. He's a super player.
Betis beat Osasuna. So Betis are fifth, aren't they? And still not given up on the Champions League yet. Certainly not given up on catching Sevilla. They scored some lovely goals. Juanmi broke his bit of a... It's drought too hard, isn't it? Because this is a guy who hasn't been a prolific goal scorer in his career, but he was for a spell. Came back with two goals. The last three goals that Betis scored in their 4-1 win were really good. The first one, almost rivaled Gonzalo Guedes for the worst goal of the season. The one where a couple of weeks ago where he's diving and falls over and hits the ball and it goes in. But so, it was a right old scruffy goal. But Betis, they're fun, aren't they? They're enjoyable.
Yes. Pellegrini made a great point after the game that they've been playing back-to-back games midweek and weekends for a long period of time. And the international break, he said he thinks it suited his players that they were due and need a much-needed break, needed rest. Some were away on international duty, some were all over the place. But by and large, the squad did have a rest and a time to regroup. And therefore, they looked sharp again at the weekend. So that's the problem with a team like Betis, when they've got that, they rely on quality. If you lose that sharpness, the passing drops a little bit, the tempo of the passes drop a little bit, the closing down drops a little bit. And, you know, players, when they're not sharp, that are... So specialising taking defenders on, that drops a little bit. So to see them back at their sharpest, and one me, that type of goal he gets, the first one, is enough to... He's a streaky striker, isn't he now?
Yeah.
So he scores a lot. didn't score for a while, gets the first one at the weekend, which was almost a block tackle that goes in. Then his second goal was an excellent finish. And then the Carvalho's goal is,
so
I was sitting watching him. I was standing up and clapping. Brilliant, brilliant finish. And then Alex Moreno with another really good goal as well that went sort of under the radar because of the quality of Carvalho's. I mean, the Carvalho's the one where he rolls it underneath on the bottom of his boot, round the keeper, and the quickness of the finish after. Super, super result. Tough for Osasuna. Betis is a tough place to go to, particularly when they're in form, and they looked him bang on form at the weekend.
Yeah, almost futsal style, wasn't it? The skill. Yeah. Bottom of his boot. Right. Does this take us on to? I think we should probably jump down to the bottom, shouldn't we? Now, because there's a the battle at the bottom is interesting. We'll stick it up for the patrons to have a look at. Too. I mean, you can all look at a league table, by the way. We're not doing anything sensational here. This is not exclusive news that we're giving out here, but. So results at the bottom that are relevant, quite a lot, in fact. So Valencia 0, Cadiz 0. We've already mentioned Alaves. So Levante beat Villarreal by 2-0. Back-to-back defeats for Villarreal in La Liga against relegation-threatened teams. And then Getafe beat Mallorca by 1-0. Which was sparked scenes of celebration, which makes them look like they might be out of it, or certainly they think they're out of it. But shall we start with that Granada Rayo Vallecano game, Terry? Because as you mentioned, a hugely controversial Rayo would feel that they've been done over there, wouldn't they? To end up drawing this game with Granada, and the handball is, I looked back. Yeah, I was thinking, right, what? Why is that handball? And I think what it is, who is it? It's Mario Suarez, isn't it?
Mario Suarez, yes.
So he jumps, and it's one for the Patreons here. Patreon.com/LTEL if you want to see me waving my hand around. So he jumps, and his hand like, is in a slightly odd position. It's like here, isn't it? Quite close to his body. And I think he gets knocked by the other player.
Oh, there's four players jumping for the same ball.
And he gets
delivered higher into the penalty
against
box.
Against his hand. Yeah, I don't think he's moved his hand in an unnatural position at all.
In the air, wasn't there? So I'm not convinced it touches his arm. I think it's his head. And there was other arms in the melee as the ball coming into the box. Definite an attempt from him to get some elevation with his arms. It wasn't, I'm putting my arm up, I'm going to knock it away with my hand. And incredibly, Herman Sanchez is claiming a foul. He goes down holding his head. Initially, he thinks he's getting a penalty because he's been pushed. It clearly wasn't. Well, I don't know. I don't know what explanation was. And the referee took 6 seconds. I've seen it 20 times. I can't see it. But the referee took 6 seconds when he was told to go and look from VAR. And as he goes across the look, it took 6 seconds for him to a couple of replays to go penalty. He took that far too lightly considering the incident and the circumstances of the game. Rayo, I thought, were going to romp home to their first win for... I've got... They haven't
18th
won
of
a
December.
Game.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 3 points in the last 33 they picked up, which does mean this, they are, unfortunately, sliding towards the relegation fight. 3 points would have pretty much got them going again. To be 2-0 up, lose Santi Comesenia at 2-0 up with a second yellow card. Probably deserved it, if I'm being honest. While Rayo was saying they feel hard done by, it was a silly challenge to make. But the penalty, certainly they can feel hard done by. And then in the end, there was 9 minutes added on. Jorge Molina gets the first goal. Luis Mia with the penalty to equalise. And Rayo, in the end, with the 9 minutes added on, were hanging on.
Hit the bar, didn't they?
Points, not a bad result for Rayo in the circumstances against the team below them, but you know, Iraola be frustrated that from 2-0 up, getting the red cards, then you know, being on the back foot for the rest of the game, conceding the first goal, and then I mean, the first goal was 67 minutes, they held on to the 94th minute, and then for the last 5 minutes, they added on time, they were struggling to hang on just the points. So that's a big blow for Rayo. And point under the circumstances isn't too bad, but it kind of leaves them feeling like it's a defeat. So therefore, you know, they're not out of it. You've got to include them in the in the pack. I don't think Getafe are out of trouble yet, but it was a big win against the team below them. That was a genuine six-pointer, wasn't it? So I think there was relief from Kike Sanchez Flores when Mayoral gets a late goal to win it for them. It was a tough game. Mallorca looked a lot more competitive than what we've seen in recent weeks under Javier Aguirre. So you could see the difference he's made. So it's prior to Aguirre getting the job and prior to Levante winning against Villarreal, that was my bottom three. But now I'm seeing Levante with an impressive win over Villarreal with two impressive goals from Morales. Look, they're not bottom anymore. Alves are bottom. I think they've gone. I haven't seen any improvement since Mendilibar took over. They played quite well for an hour or so against Atletico, but they don't score enough goals. So I think out of the teams now, I'm looking at probably my prediction is Alves to go. And then after that, it's still because I see Sergio Gonzalez one defeat in seven games since he's been at Cadiz. And they get a decent point away from home against Valencia at the Mestalla. So you could argue none of those teams, any of those teams, Granada are not in great form, not picking up lots of points. So, you know, that's the reason they're down there. Elche at the weekend, lose to Athletic Club, decent game. Athletic deserved to win, had more chances. Iñaki Williams guilty, missing a few. So Elche get a late consolation. Elche have got some work to do as well. So, you know, Getafe are not out of it by any means. But I understand the reaction of Kike Sanchez Flores. I don't think it was we're safe. I think it was that was a big game to keep the team below you further away, to stretch away your advantage. That's the type of scenes we're going to be seeing from game to game now. And that it is a dogfight at the bottom now because you don't often get a number of teams suddenly start playing better. I mean, Levante have changed managers, Cadiz have changed managers, Mallorca have changed managers, and it appears to be working. Alaves have changed, and it hasn't worked. So, therefore, I do really think that Alaves are the only obvious ones now. Alaves have only had one win since early November, one win in 18 games. So, they're the team, the only one at the bottom, them, and I would say Granada, who are in a rocky form, and, of course, Mallorca. They're in a poor run of form as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of... We'll have to, at some point, we're getting to the point of the season where you sit down with your pen and paper and the fixture list and start assigning points to people, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're almost there.
I mean, Mallorca have had seven straight defeats.
Let's have a look at Mallorca.
Alaves, one win in 18.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Granada, how their run of form, one win in the last 12, and that was against Alaves, who were bottom. Yeah.
So there's a lot of six-pointers. There's a lot of six-pointers, aren't there? Because Elche, yes. Mallorca, Alaves, oh, yeah. Mallorca, Granada. And they play Rayo, Mallorca. Who could be in it by then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think they've got a better chance now with Aguirre. So at the weekend, probably, if I'm being honest, a draw was probably a fair result. Getafe missed a penalty. And his Uno, surprisingly. Great save from Sergio Rico. And Franco Russo picks up a second yellow card. So from that point on, whereas prior to Russo getting sent off after an hour, prior to that, they were going for the win. After that, it was just a question of holding on for the draw and they couldn't do that. So I did see improvement from Mallorca the weekend, but it's still seven straight defeats. How long do you keep going as a player when you keep getting beat every week and your manager's still trying to, well, it's a new manager, trying to reinforce belief you can stay up. It is difficult when you think nothing's going your way. So it's a really difficult one to call who's going to get relegated in a month. There's a number of teams that you think should be out of it because you look at the points accumulated by the teams in the bottom three, bottom five are not anywhere near a point a game in some cases. Now, all of a sudden, they are. Some of those are.
Yeah.
You know,
and with all those 6 pointers to come, they've got to start picking up points, haven't they? Again, you look at Rio, they've got to play everyone at the bottom.
Levante have picked up 11 points in their last seven games.
Yeah.
Three wins, two draws, two defeats. So they're well above a point per game in the last seven matches.
Yeah.
So if they continue that, so I was thinking that 33, 34 would be enough. But I'm not convinced it is now because I think they're going to start picking up points, those, as they've already shown, the teams at the bottom. So the points total might be higher than what Rayo have, Espanyol are safe. but Rayo, Getafe, Elche, they don't need many more. But I don't think what they've got now is going to be enough. Whereas a month ago, I probably thought 33, 34 gets you safe. I don't think it will now.
Yeah. Cool. Right, a quick word. Villarreal got any chance against Bayern Munich?
Because of Unai Emery's record in Europe, his tactical strategies that he comes up with, yes, but they're going to need to play a lot better than they did against Levante. It does clearly look Villarreal got problems this year with La Liga, combining it with the Champions League. Is it understandable? Yes, of course it is. I mean, they're on an unbelievable run in Europe, winning the Europa League, and then getting through the group stages, and knocking out Juventus, playing Bayern Munich. No wonder they're distracted. So, yeah, I mean, they're Bayern Munich favourites to go through in this game, because I rate Villarreal and Benfica as the outsiders in this stage of the competition. But, yeah, I won't put it past Unai Emery to make it really competitive at the very least.
Right then. Well, enjoy your La Liga football, everybody. There's a Monday night game, isn't there? Just check which way around that.
Real Sociedad
Espanol. Home to Espanol. And we pick up again Friday, Sevilla against Granada.
You just said, actually, I've got 1-0. I've got the result there, 1-0. Real Sociedad 1, Espanol 0. I feel it on my little check sheet. I've done it already.
Get yourself down the bookies, everyone. We don't normally do betting tips, but we'll leave you with that one. And then, of course, all the European games come up. Massive week of European football. If you want to be around for the chat for that, we will be doing that later. Probably have to do that Friday, won't we, after, or Thursday night, whatever. So, yeah, so Patreons, watch out for that. Patreon.com/LTEL. Everybody else, thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another podcast next week.